Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So this morning we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations, Text 42. Yesham,
Yesham,
Sa,
Sa,
Yesham,
Yesham,
Bhagavan,
Bhagavan,
Dayaye,
Dayaye,
Ananta,
Ananta,
Sarvatmanashrita,
Sarvatmanashrita,
Ado,
Ado,
Yadi,
Yadi,
Nirvyalika,
Nirvyalika,
Te,
Te,
Dustara,
Dustara,
Atita, Ranti,
Ahitaranti,
Cha,
Deva,
Deva,
Maya,
Maya,
Naisha,
Naisha,
Mamaha,
Mamaha,
Iti,
Iti,
Di,
Shwa,
Shrigala,
Shrigala,
Vakshye,
Vakshye,
Yesham sa esha Bhagavan dayayedananta.
Yesham sa esha Bhagavan dayayedananta.
Sarvatmanashita pado yadi nirvyalika.
Sarvatmanashita pado yadi nirvyalika.
Te dustaram atitaranti cha deva maya.
Te dustaram atitaranti cha deva maya.
Naisham mamaham iti dishwat shrigala pakshye.
Naisham mamaham iti dishwat shrigala pakshye.
Only.
And to the Lord only.
Sa,
Sa,
the Lord.
Lord.
Esha,
Esha.
The,
the.
Bhagavan,
Bhagavan.
The personality of Godhead.
Personality of Godhead.
Dayaye,
Dayaye.
Does bestow his mercy.
Does bestow his mercy.
Ananta,
Ananta.
The unlimited potential.
The unlimited potential.
Sarva Atmana,
Sarva Atmana.
By all means.
By all means.
Without reservation.
Without reservation.
Ashrita pada,
Ashrita pada,
surrendered soul,
surrendered soul,
yadi,
yadi,
if such surrender,
if such surrender,
nirvyalika,
nirvyalika,
without pretension,
without pretension,
te,
te,
those only,
those only,
dustaram,
dustaram,
insurmountable,
insurmountable,
atitaranti,
atitaranti.
Can overcome.
Can overcome.
Cha,
cha.
And the paraphernalia.
And the paraphernalia.
Deva Maya.
Deva Maya.
Diverse energies of the Lord.
Diverse energies of the Lord.
Na,
na.
Not.
Not.
Esha.
Esha.
Of them.
Of them.
Mama.
Mama.
Mine.
Mine.
Aham.
Aham.
Myself.
Myself.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Thus.
Di.
Di.
Conscious.
Conscious.
Shwa.
Shwa.
Dogs.
Dogs.
Shrigala.
Shrigala.
Jackals.
Jackals.
Bakshye.
Bakshye.
In the matter of eating.
In the matter of eating.
Translation. But anyone who is specifically favored by the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, due to unalloyed surrender unto the service of the Lord, can overcome the insurmountable ocean of illusion and can understand the Lord. But those who are attached to this body, which is meant to be eaten at the end by dogs and jackals, cannot do so. purport by Srila Prabhupada. The unalloyed devotees of the Lord know the glories of the Lord in the sense that they can understand how great the Lord is and how great is his expansion of diverse energy. Those who are attached to the perishable body can hardly enter into the realm of the science of Godhead. The whole materialistic world, based on the conception of the material body as the self, is ignorant of the science of God. The materialist is always busy working for the welfare of the material body, not only his own, but also those of his children, kinsmen, community men, countrymen, etc. The materialists have many branches of philanthropic and altruistic activities from a political, national, and international angle of vision. But none of the fieldwork can go beyond the jurisdiction of the misconception of identifying the material body with the spirit soul. Unless, therefore, one is saved from the wrong conception of the body and the soul, there is no knowledge of Godhead. And unless there is knowledge of God, all advancement of material civilization, however dazzling, should be considered a failure. Yesham Saesha Bhagavan Dayedananta Saravatmanashitapado Yadi Nirvili Kam Te Dustaram Matitaranti Chadeva Mayam Naisham Mamahamititi Swashigala Bhakshye. But anyone who is specifically favored by the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, due to unalloyed surrender unto the service of the Lord, can overcome the insurmountable ocean of illusion and can understand the Lord. But those who are attached to this body, which is meant to be eaten at the end by dogs and jackals, cannot do so. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prakarne Nirvishesha Shunyavani Vastitya Deshtarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalp Churubhyascha Gripa Sindhubhyevacha Padidhanam Bhavarebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So this is a very powerful verse, very strongly presented verse spoken by Lord Brahma to Narada Muni, who has been inquiring about, you could say, along the lines of who really is the Supreme. Yes. Are you the Supreme? Is someone else the Supreme? Who is the Supreme? What is the nature of the Supreme? How are they Supreme? What does it mean? What does being supreme mean? Important question. So these types of... this was the inquiry of Narada Muni, who just somewhat a little before this, not so long ago, expressed his surprise to Lord Brahma that I thought you were supreme. I thought you were supreme. But now I see that you are worshipping someone else. That means that you are not supreme, someone else is. So what is all of this? So like we said, this is a very strong verse and purport. And Srila Prabhupada, particularly in the purport, very systematically brings the whole idea, the whole a subject which is being put forward here brings it to a very important conclusion So first of all, at least, first of all, everyone here, within this material world, everyone here is in illusion. They're in illusion in many ways. This is Maya. Maya means that which is not. So in material life, in many ways, it is a multifaceted type of situation or state of mind that the conditioned soul is in. That, but the first thing is, they think, the conditioned soul thinks, that I am this body. And then from that basic premise, so many other things just naturally flow. If I am this body, then I must work for the body. And I must get things which are nice for the body. And I must protect the body from things which will inconvenience or danger it. And I must, if my body needs something like to eat, to sleep, to reproduce, and all these things, I must cater to all these things. So it becomes a very sort of complicated picture, the position of the conditioned soul in this material world. But the very first step being, you could say, necessarily, who am I? What am I? Because if you don't know who you are and what you are, what can you do, really? And it's really not a very good situation at all, to say the least. So at that very first step, who am I? What am I? And then all the other things which naturally flow from that. Unfortunately, it is just very unfortunate. Everything else which flows from that is, that is an illusion. That's an illusion. I am not that thing which I think I am. And therefore all my life's activities, which are then dedicated to living in terms of that illusory conception, everything else necessarily must be wrong. It just cannot be right. Srila Prabhupada gave a number of examples in that regard. One example Srila Prabhupada gave was, if in some complex mathematical equation, if right at the beginning and the very first step, something which the rest of the equation depends on and is a sort of development of, if that first step or one of the very first steps is really wrong, instead of 1 + 1 = 2, it's 1 + 1 = 3, or just as a type of example, then everything which flows from that, which is then dependent on that, is just going to be wrong. And then you may have a very complex and impressive looking, as Prabhupada says here, dazzling, very dazzling looking equation. And you may have very cleverly applied yourself as to how you develop the equation, but it's simply all going to be wrong, and, well, tough luck. That's what material life means, tough luck. In this way, in that way, in every way. Because the very first idea upon which it is based is quite wrong. Of course, you know, the whole situation, if you take it back even a step further, it's one thing if the conditioned soul has a misconception of who he or she is, but it's another thing, sort of going back even a step further, is that in this world, everyone takes birth in this world in such a condition that they have, you could say, absolutely no idea of anything. Who they are, we just mentioned who they are. But then how about, where am I? When the conditioned soul appears in this world, he or she has absolutely no idea of what is this place which I have arrived in. And what to speak of, how did it come to be? And how does it function? And what is it for? And how it should be dealt with? They have literally no idea at all. And then even further than that, how did I get here? How did I just get here, meaning into the whole place to start off with? But even then after that, how did I get into the particular position in life which I've just now appeared in, having taken birth in this type of species, this type of family, in this particular geographical location? How did it happen? What caused it all? They have literally no idea at all. And who is behind it, or who or whatever is behind it? Absolutely no idea. So sometimes we say that, you know, of course we say Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalaka, like that. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. Yeah. So, but what that means, it doesn't mean that I was born and I just didn't understand some things, like I didn't understand the language, so I had to learn the language, or something of that sort. I was born in the darkest ignorance means it is complete, is total. There's not even practically no semblance of understanding, of knowledge. I mean, when you are actually born, even such things, when a living being is born, particularly we see amongst the humans, when the child is born, there's, what to speak of all these other points which we've mentioned, but they don't even know how to keep themselves alive, how to eat. Any little child just born, if you leave the child, if the child is not cared for, then every child basically will die, because they don't even know how to keep themselves alive. So it's interesting, if one really thinks about it, the nature or the sort of extent of the ignorance of the conditioned soul in this material world, it is as close to complete as you could get, and just sort of all-encompassing ignorance and all-consuming ignorance, and just totally overwhelming ignorance. But then, after a few years, having received some education and perhaps becoming a little successful in accumulating material facilities, and then having a nice place to live and so on and so forth, then they think, very good. Life is fine. But life, unfortunately, is far from fine. Yes, there is impending disaster. As complete as there is ignorance, so there is as complete impending disaster just coming. At the time of death, at least, and in many cases, well before the time of death also. So this is what's going on. And the verse and Srila Prabhupada in the purport are emphasizing this. And the way Srila Prabhupada puts it, which is, I felt particularly important actually, is that Srila Prabhupada says, let's see, unless one is saved from the wrong conception of the body and the soul, in other words, unless you understand who you actually are, then there can be no knowledge of God. And unless there's no knowledge of God, then whatever you do is going to be absolute failure. This is a very interesting sort of perspective on Bhagavad Gita, actually. That Bhagavad Gita begins, of course, by not really, certainly not in a very focused and exclusive way, talking about God. Although, you know, there's mention many, many births, both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot. And this is the nature of the Lord, is distinct from us. But otherwise, in general, at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna focuses basically exclusively on this point of who we are. Who we are, what we are, and who we are not, and what we are not. And at least some insight into the different problems which arise when we do not understand who we are. Then he goes on to talk about God and our relationship with God and how important that is and what to do about it, etc. But just like, you know, if we look at Bhagavad Gita as an educational literature, which it is not a recreational literature or some entertainment or just some sharing some ideas. It's educational. It's pointing out and clarifying certain facts. And it's doing so, as with any educational book, it is doing so in a step-by-step fashion. It is not just haphazardly throwing out some ideas and just, but it is very step-by-step, very systematic, very thought out, and presented in such a way that, first of all, it helps people who are just total ignorance, and then gradually brings them to a certain amount of knowledge, and then building on that to another step higher in knowledge, and then building on that to another step higher. So it's a systematic presentation. And you would know that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, first of all, he talks about knowledge which is guhyam, means confidential, means knowledge of the soul, right at the beginning. Then he goes on to knowledge which is guhyataram, not just guhyam, confidential, but guhyataram means more confidential, knowledge of the super soul in the heart of every living entity, and how he's working, and the relationship between the conditioned souls on the material level in him. And then third stage, later, Guhya Tamam, which means the most confidential. Guhya meaning confidential. So three degrees or stages of confidentiality or seriousness or importance like that. Guhyam Guhyataram Guhyatamam. Confidential, more confidential, most confidential. And of course, we've all been to school and we all know very well. You start with ABC and you end up with maybe Shakespeare or something like that. And you start with 1, 2, 3 and you end up with calculus, algebra, and things like this. And it's not that when you just enter the school, you just go into E equals MC squared. Well, we don't want to go into that anyway, because that's another thing. But you know what I mean. And it's not that at the end of school that you're going through 1, 2, 3. It's systematic and it's building step by step from one point to another, then from that point to another. And that's what Bhagavad Gita is doing. It's, you know, Krishna is highly intelligent. Krishna is a highly experienced educator, actually. And he knows how to present things step by step so people get it and then can go on and finally come to a point of like completion or something like completion. So therefore Srila Prabhupada says, unless one is saved from the wrong conception of the body and the soul, there can be no knowledge of God. And if there's no knowledge of God, then all advancement of material civilization, however dazzling, should be considered a failure. Yeah. So in this regard, the point is that people can't really become Krishna conscious unless they go through that initial stage of understanding who I am, spirit, soul, distinct from the body. What is the distinction? How does it work? All the various implications and aspects of these ideas. Any attempt to just then go on to now we will understand Krishna and how he's working and his pastimes and who he is and all these types of things, it'll be rather pointless as much as for children or being educated without going through ABC and learning, you know, then on to the grammar, nouns and verbs and the utilization of these things. What's the point of just diving into Shakespeare from the outset? Or even, you know, even not Shakespeare, but just reading some books, even simple books. What's really the point? The children are going to be lost. It's not going to work well. And you know, here's an interesting little point, which a teacher, my last Russian language teacher, told me. I pointed out, I just found it interesting, and I do find it interesting, that we have many devotees whose first language is definitely not English. Some of them only encountered English on a, you know, sort of little bit regular basis, if at all, when they became devotees. And then they sort of, you know, one of the strategies is read Prabhupada's books in English with a dictionary next to you. yeah, what can you do? And they sort of, you know, learn English in that way. But I pointed out to this lady last year that I know a number of these people, and they can speak English. They can understand English. You know, anything except the most complex, just normal English, they can deal with. But when they speak English, they speak funny English. Yeah. They speak funny English. Yeah. They get things mixed up. And they've got sort of certain speech habits which are just like, it's bad English. And she said, yes, that unless someone takes the trouble to actually go through it, you know, what one, if you just sort of pick it up as you go, then what happens is that in the end, you get this kind of rough, it's rough English, or, you know, whatever language it may be. Maybe that's how you end up with Afrikaans. It's like rough Dutch. Really rough Dutch. I was in Belgium speaking to some of the devotees there for whom Dutch is their mother tongue. And I was speaking my broken Afrikaans. And they said, listen, just speak English. So, but anyway, the point here is, you've got to go through it from the beginning. Like you may be aware, Srila Prabhupada, on the not very many occasions that he would meet with Christians, like priests, you know, Christians, serious Christians. He was not into, I mean, he didn't mind that much, but he was not like looking for Christians to speak to because he thought, well, they're interested in God, so be good to speak to them. But when he did, you probably know what he would focus on. He would focus on thou shalt not kill and the question of meat eating, which, you know, I think as we're all well aware, they just haven't got that. They just haven't got that at all. Missed that point by a mile. So, and Srila Prabhupada would sort of repeatedly emphasize this point. And there's at least one conversation which I read, and there may well be more, in which I think it's a priest says to Prabhupada, that Prabhupada's been emphasizing this, and the priest says, okay, look, you know, okay, fine, thank you for, you know, that point, but let us discuss something else. And Prabhupada makes the point, what is the point of discussing something else if you haven't got this point? So, if people, the point here in the verse and the purport is that the materialistic people, they're attached to the body. They identify with the body as the self. And therefore, therefore, they cannot overcome the insurmountable ocean of illusion, one, and two, they cannot understand the Lord, and therefore, ultimately in the long run, they cannot become favored by the Lord, get the Lord's mercy, and ultimately, they cannot go back to Godhead. They remain in this material world. I was once in a place called Riga in Latvia many years ago, and I was giving a class and I was trying to contrast in as vivid terms as I was able the difference between the material world and Goloka Vrindavan. how Goloka Vrindavan is very nice in so many ways, and the material world is really not nice in many ways. And at some point I said, so, who would like to go back to the spiritual world? Virtually everyone put their hand up. And who would like to stay in the material world and suffer? And one, you know, kind of funny man, I mean, we knew him to be somewhat funny, he almost stood up, but he said, I'll stay, I'll stay. I'll stay. Oh, well. Prabhupada was talking about if everyone becomes Krishna conscious, everyone can go back to Godhead. And devotee asked Prabhupada, but Srila Prabhupada, if everyone goes back to Godhead, what will happen to the material world? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, that is our mission, no more material world. And the devotee became a little flustered, but Prabhupada, you know, what about the material world? And Srila Prabhupada said, don't worry, there'll always be some fools and rascals who will stay. So don't worry that it'll become obsolete or neglected. It will go on. So this is a very important point, that ultimately the devotees, they're specifically favored by the Lord. They get the Lord's mercy. Which the ultimate manifestation of that is to go back to Godhead or to develop love of God. This is the ultimate possible achievement, goal. And this is there for those who are favored by the Lord. How? I mean, how do they get that favor? Lord Brahma says, due to unalloyed surrender unto the service of the Lord. So anyone who gets into that position, favored by the Lord, because of their unalloyed surrender to the Lord's service, they can achieve these two things: overcome the otherwise insurmountable ocean of material illusion, plus understand the Lord, who's otherwise sort of like an enigma, or just like means basically a big question mark. But those who are attached to this body, it doesn't begin with being attached, it begins first with identifying. Then when you identify, this is me, then you become attached because it's me. Not you just become attached, then you think it's me. First you think it's me, and then you become attached. And then you develop the whole way of life that just unfolds from that. So even we see, and it's, you know, it's just part of the same point, and it's extremely important that people who are involved in worship of God, but not in the mood of, or not at least aspiring for or trying for, unalloyed surrender unto the service of the Lord. People who are worshipping God, but not in that way, and which generally, well, I mean, there are maybe two categories there. One would be the impersonalists. They're sort of worshipping God or trying to focus in some way or another, but with the idea of becoming God or merging into God, something along those lines. Such people are not so common nowadays. Generally, we find nowadays people who have some program or idea of worshipping God, forgetting material things, for living more happily and, you know, say more happily and successfully and comfortably and so on. In the illusory condition. In other words, I am in illusion. I think I'm this body. Actually, I'm not this body at all. I am something totally different. And what helps my body definitely doesn't help me. And usually, because of my consciousness, those things which help my body contribute to my being in illusion further, actually. So I'm in this illusory condition. It has nothing to do with reality. Actually, it is the very obstacle to my coming to the point of reality. And I could come to that point of reality by the grace of God if I served him in an unalloyed way. But no, now I don't do that. What I do, if I have some interest in God, instead of some program for getting out of that disastrous illusion, I now worship God so I can have a nicer situation in the illusion. My illusion is better than yours. My confusion is better than yours. As Prabhupada would say sometimes, in a jail, in a prison, there are the bad cells, you know, the bad areas, the solitary confinement, or, you know, you get mixed up with the violent people and you get abused. And then there's sort of normal prison conditions. And then there may be some prison, a situation in it. It's a prison. But it's like a normal house. And people can just come and see you anytime. And you have all the comforts. And just, you know, television and whatever else. Only thing is, can't go out. Because it's a prison. You cannot actually go out. So it's a prison. But a prisoner in such a, or say, the prisoners in the much worse situations, they might become envious of the prisoners in those situations. We want that. Why can't we have those conditions? And the prisoners in those, in the sort of luxury conditions, you know, like some people get placed under house arrest. You know, this lady in, is it Myanmar, is that what they call it? Ki? You know the one I'm talking about, who got the Nobel Peace Prize? Anyway, some people are placed under house arrest. And she was under, she couldn't go out of the house at all. I think it was something like 15 years. But she's living at home. So some people, some prisoners, I mean, she or someone who's in such a prison situation may laugh at those who are in solitary confinement, look at you fools, I'm in a better position. Ha ha. But they're in a prison. So in this case, though, what we're saying is they're misusing the very thing, the very facility offered by the Supreme Lord for their deliverance from the unfortunate, hellish situation of material life. They're using that just so they can further their material life. What is that? It's like using something to hurt yourself. You pick up a hammer. You can use a hammer. You can build a house. But with your hammer, you smash yourself on your head. What is that? you know, it's great foolishness, but it's a very unfortunate situation. So, but the devotees, because of their unalloyed surrender under the service of the Lord, they are favored by the Lord in different ways. They can, well, two ways in particular mentioned here. Overcoming the illusion of material life, or overcoming the insurmountable ocean of the illusion. Plus, they can understand the Lord. Who is the Lord? And how wonderful is the Lord? And what does it mean to have a relationship, and how to develop a relationship? And they can do these things, all by the mercy of the Lord, based on their unalloyed service, which they are given by the mercy of the Lord also. So we, as aspiring devotees, it's really important, really essential, that we get these ideas and really try our best not to remain sort of even just internally, mentally, psychologically entangled in material life with some sort of material aspirations, even if, like, we're living in a temple, so we're not actually doing any of those things. But in the back of our mind, we have some idea that we might do those things, or could do those things, like become rich and live in luxury, or, you know, get this and get that. The mind, as Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the mind can be your friend, but it can be your enemy as well. And unfortunately, for the conditioned soul, and even for the aspiring devotees, for the conditioned souls, the mind is always the enemy, and basically never the friend. But for the aspiring devotees, sometimes the mind is an enemy. Ah, the mind. It's amazing. The mind, the capacity of the mind to come up with non-Krishna conscious ideas is, you must give it 10 out of 10. Yeah. You must give it 11 out of 10. It's amazing, actually. Yeah. And at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, there's the description in, I think, the 5th chapter, maybe, of Vyasadeva's realization of Krishna. And when he realized Krishna, he saw that Maya was near, but she was standing back, and she was sort of ashamed, you know, sort of holding back. Because Maya, the presiding deity of the illusory energy, is a pure devotee of the Lord. But her services to keep the living entities in illusion, which include tempting those who are trying to be or become devotees to see if they are going to fall back into illusion or if they're going to continue on. And she, it is a thankless task to try and sort of goad the aspiring devotees that, you know, are you going to remain Krishna conscious in this situation? Or what's going to happen to you? Or in some, are you going to remain Krishna conscious in another situation? What are you going to do here? Let's see. Until one comes to the point that whatever she sort of throws at you, that you're just not going to be interested at all, you're going to remain fixed in devotional service, when you really reach that point, then the description is Maya bows down and offers her obeisances to you. And then she no longer tries to push you and test you and press you, but now she worships you, because now you're a pure devotee of the Lord, and she worships the pure devotees. So we really have to do our best to not, to try to avoid getting into contemplating, meditating, what to speak of doing material activities, by trying to remain fixed in devotional service, fixed at the lotus feet of the Lord, fixed at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, fixed at the lotus feet of the spiritual master, like this. And then gradually we can come to this stage of getting the full mercy of the Lord and being able to go back to Godhead, or develop pure love for Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare. Any comment or question? Tat Vivit Prabhu, some words of wisdom.
I can't think of it.
Mataji.
Marshall, you had mentioned that how Bhagavad Gita is divided in three sections, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga. So I was thinking, if it's a systematic study, why we find Bhakti Yoga?
Well, look, it is systematic. But after the 12th chapter, there's some essential, but qualitatively secondary type of knowledge presented. But then at the end, there's a conclusion. Everything's brought to a conclusion. This is how Krishna has done it. To bring it, to help us come step by step up to, say, you know, the 10th chapter, 11th, 12th chapters, then some sort of ancillary knowledge, but it's essential knowledge. But then in the 18th chapter again, really bring out the conclusion and even bring it out even more, actually. The way Krishna brings out the conclusion at the end is more so than he does in the middle. Like, he doesn't talk about Sarvadharma Paricharya in the middle. This is now only at the end he talks about things like that. So, yes. So it is like that. It's not that it's not like that. Yes.
How do we know when we're out of devotion?
Well, you know, there are degrees, of course. I mean, it's really, there are degrees. One way that you can know that you're getting out of illusion is that you see you're becoming more and more concerned about not being an illusion, and more sort of resistant and like unhappy if some illusion is encroaching. But if you want to say, like, out of illusion in an absolute sense, when Krishna walks up to you and talks to you and congratulates you, then you'll know, I'm out of illusion. Yeah. But otherwise, you know, the more we feel rejection of the illusory situation, the more we feel that, and an appreciation for Krishna consciousness, and that we're getting a better and more experience of Krishna consciousness, like from our chanting and so on, then these are all signs that we are making some progress. Yeah. But we should never make the mistake of thinking we're out of illusion. If we do, then, you know, pride becomes before a fall. Then we'll find, if we start becoming complacent like that, think that we've reached a sort of a plateau, a good plateau, and we can just, you know, we're fine there. Then that's one of the great tricks of Maya, and she will then start pulling you down in more focused ways. So like Srila Prabhupada said, that about the Guru Vandana song we sing at Guru Puja, Prabhupada talking about that, there's a lecture, he talks about it in some detail, it's very nice. He says that we should always consider ourselves a fool in front of the spiritual master, but in general, understand I'm a fool. And the more we can feel like that and not get to that point of, you know, I'm now educated, etc., Krishna conscious, we should always remain a fool in front of the greater, particularly in front of the greater personality. Yeah. Then, and the more we can really feel like that while enthusiastically engaged in Krishna consciousness, then we're getting out of illusion. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Sorry, I had my hand up. I'm just going to clarify
something.
You were saying how Maya keeps pushing the devotee until the point where she can't win over.
Yeah.
So with like Bilva Mangal Thakur and Jadabharat, Prabhupada says both of them were on the level of Bhava Bhakti. So was that Maya they fell prey to? On such a high level, Bhava Bhakti?
Yeah. Not Jadabharat, but Bharat Maharaj was on the level of Bhava. But the level of Bhava is not full perfection. It's just the beginning of perfection. And there's still the leftover effects of previous offenses, which is the reason why a person on the level of Bhava is not on the level of Prema. And actually, Jiva Goswami and Bhakti Sandhava, Prabhupada doesn't mention it so much, like in the fifth canto, but Jiva Goswami talks about it. That Bharat Maharaj, we can understand he became a deer, became attached to the deer, because of some previous offense. We don't know what it was, but there must have been, otherwise a person like that, they cannot fall down due to ordinary material influence.
So even the governing of the reactions of offenses and devotional service, that's done by Maya?
It's done more by Bhakti Devi, the presiding deity. But Maya, because she's a pure devotee, she's not just a demigod. She's involved in the process.
So same with Bilva Mangal Thakur. He, at least it seems like he had quite a gross attachment to the opposite sex.
Yeah.
But Prabhupada says he was on the level of Bhava.
You know, I don't know about before that, but I wouldn't use him as an example.
Uh-huh.
He may or may not have had really some attachment like that.
Oh.
He may have just felt he had, thought he had, or in his humility thought. Yeah. But he only asked for that because he wanted to get the hairpin and take out his eyes. But Bharat Maharaj, yeah, he fell. He became attached and fell. And Jiva Goswami says that it's because of offense. Because on the level of bhava, a person is no longer, there's no longer any material attachment. Or, yeah, no longer any effects of material conditioning. But they offend. Offenses in devotional service means offenses to bhakti. And bhakti is a person. And she withdraws her mercy.
So Maya is an expansion of... No, not really.
Maya is a friend, a servant.
Of Bhakti Devi.
Yeah, sure. Big servant.